This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. 75 years ago this week, the Ardennes counteroffensive began in Europe, triggering what we would come to remember as the Battle of the Bulge. On the second day of that battle, German forces led by Joachim Peiper executed 84 Americans they had captured at a crossroads near Malmedy, Belgium, in an incident that would become known as the Malmedy Massacre. A young medic named E.J. Leatherman wouldn't realize until later how close he came to suffering that same fate.
On the 15th of December, they came through and they said, take everything that you can carry with you that's important. Anything else, we're going to burn it or bury it or give it to the people around here. So that's what we did. And next morning, we took off in a column of all the half-tracks and all our personnel. We had 1,500 men in our battalion. As we were going down this road, I heard this sound above my head behind me, and it sounded like a 6x6 truck up there in the sky. I looked back, and here's this German pilot. I can see him just as plain. He's a little young guy. He looked like probably about 20 years old, and he had this fighter pilot. So he cut loose with a burst of ammo, and it came along our left side on the dirt, and then he cut across. He was swinging back and forth because he was afraid we were going to get our machine gun set up and knock him out of the sky. But he got away before we could dismount and get all of our machine guns set up for him. But that introduced us to the Battle of Bulge. That's the first arms that started us on that trek into Malmedy. They said when we get to Malmedy, that'll be the start of the Bulge. And that was true. When we got there, they placed us in a field. And we, the medics in our group, we stayed at a dairy. The guy owned four cows and had a few of the big milking cans. We used those cans as urinals up in the second floor. And the men, it was all snow and cold. And I stayed in my half track. I made my bedroll with three big blankets, and I curled them back and forth three times. So I had about nine layers of blankets in me, and I laid on the floor in my half track on that iron, and that's where I slept and lived. We were there for several days, and well, about six airplanes came over us, and they were American planes, and these planes were bombers. So we were standing out in the snow waving at them, and all of a sudden they dropped the bombs. The snow was flying. They went in and hit Malmedy, downtown, all over the building there, killed a lot of people. The fact was that the German head honkers had put in a call on the radios that they had captured Malmedy and that they had waiting for the Americans to show up. So our military then sent the aircrafts in, thinking they were going to bomb the Germans there in Malmedy. Inadvertently hit some of our people and a lot of the civilians. So that was my occasion of being there. We got orders one day that our B company over in Stavelo was being butchered, and they had a lot of wounded and killed and needed the medics over there to take care of them. So the colonel and I were good friends because he loved baseball, and he always won money when we'd win ball games. But he asked me, he said, would you take some men and get over there and see what you can do for those people? And I said, well, I don't know how to get there. He said, well, just follow the road there. They'll give you a map. We took off on this. We had two ambulances with half tracks, and we had six of us medics. And as we were going along, we were about 6 kilometers out of Malmedy when I noticed a big rig, like something you'd see in a motor pool working on tanks and things like that. But I'd never seen one like this. But in the bottom, in the back, there was a transmission, oil leaking out of it, and there was a fire coming out. So here it is, foggy, can't hardly see anything, and I'm looking at something, big vehicle that's burning. How's it burning in this ice and snow, cold and fog? And just by then, Nelson said, Leatherman, did you see that? And I said, what's that? He said, a command car just went by us with a big swastika on it. I said, hold it, turn it, get this thing off the road, get it over here on the side. Behind us, Brown, who lived in Tulare, he was driving that half track. He pulled over behind us. So just that time, the command car backed up. There was no place they could turn around. It was too narrow and it was too icy. So they backed up, and they stop right across from where we were. They start hollering in German. The guy said, "What's he talking about, Leatherman?" I said, "Well, they want us to get out of the half tracks, put our hands over our heads. They want to search us."
You understood German because your parents and grandparents had spoken German all throughout your childhood, right?
That's correct. I didn't know I knew that much German, but it came to me quite rapidly. I had read up in the little book that they give you in the military how to speak French, how to speak German. So during the months we traveled, I did practice my French and my German. The fellas got out and stood there, and the driver, he had a machine gun, and the man, the officers up on this command car, had a higher bench built. It was about 3 or 4 feet higher than normal command car. He looked like Hitler, twice as more powerful than Hitler, with this big fancy rig of his. I stayed in my half track and watched this. They lined him up, and the driver searching, and he came to Walters, and he found a Luger pistol in his jacket. Well, the Lugers were for the German officers, so this driver took the pistol out of his pocket and hit him in the head and knocked him down on the ice. He started hollering at the officer, the German officer, and they were going back and forth pretty rapidly, and I thought, oh my God, they're going to kill Walters because you're not allowed as a medic to have arms on you. I kind of sweat that out for a moment. Then I heard the colonel say something to the driver that sounded like artillery. When I saw that they weren't going to kill Walters, I got out of the half track and I started hollering at attention in German. And so they looked at me and they hollered at me, come over here. So I went out in the middle of the road and they said, what are you guys doing here? And I said, we're on our way to Stabilo. I was speaking German as well as I could. They said, why are you going to Stabilo? What's your name of your outfit? How many men do you got? So I told them, we have 1,500 men. We did have 1,500 men, but I told them 2,500. And I said, we have about 50 tanks. We're in Malmedy and we're coming this way. I think you guys ought to get out of here if you don't want to get shot. And they said, what are you going to do in Stabilo? And I said, we have to take care of the wounded there. And we take care of the wounded. And I threw in the fact that we also took care of the enemy. Even though they were the enemy, if they were wounded, we took care of them, hoping that this would persuade them to just leave us alone so that we could get out of there. Oh, they started speaking in Blattdeutsch, which is a slang German. Well, on my mother's side, they spoke a lot of Blattdeutsch, so I knew that as well as I did High German. Anyway, I figured out what they were saying is that they would take care of us with the artillery. Don't worry about it. Just leave them alone. The big commander said, you keep your men right here for 15 minutes. If you move before then, we will fire on you with our artillery. And I said, okay, we will stay 15 minutes. So they took off and went down the road as fast as they could. I said, let's get out of here. So we jumped in our half tracks. We started going as fast as we could. We went about, I'd say, a half a mile, not even a quarter of a mile. And here came an artillery shell, landed on my side of the road. The snow flew up in the air. The next fire hit on the left side of the road, just missing our half track. As we traveled on, going back to Malmedy, and we came to 8 GIs out in the middle of the road. They were waving. We couldn't get by them, so we stopped. They said, what the hell are they doing shooting at the medics? Who is firing on the medics? And they said, let's get out of here. So they started running back towards Malmedy. So we traveled another about a quarter of a mile, came to another little bend in the road, and there was a lieutenant there with about 24 men. He said, what happened back there? What's all that shooting about? Were they firing at you guys? And we said, yeah, but we didn't want to say anything. We told the other group up ahead, and they started running. He says, my group don't run. He said, what happened? So I told him, and he said, holy cow. He said, where are you headed? And I said, we're going back to Malmedy to find out where we're supposed to go, because we're not going that through that road. So we went back to Malmedy, and the colonel and the outfit saw us coming back, so they sent a runner over to where we were in our bivouac area, and he said, Colonel Irwin wants to see you, Leatherman. So I went over there, and he said, what happened? So I told him what happened. Oh, incidentally, when we backed up our half track to turn around by that big rig that was burning, I kept my eyes, my door open. And I was keeping Nelson from getting us stuck in that mud, and I was afraid we might not be able to get out of there. And as we drove back, I saw where we had driven over the leg of a soldier. He was buried underneath that ice and snow by that big rig. So when I told Colonel Irwin about it, well, he said, you did a good job, Leatherman. He said, you saved your two ambulances and you saved five medics. And he said, we need those ambulances to figure out how to get them over to Stavelo. So he congratulated me, and I went back to my quarters. I was there about a half an hour, and they came and said, Colonel wants to see you again. I said, okay. So I went over. He said, we just had a man come in here that saw you guys get captured, and he was up in the hills. They killed 100 GIs yesterday, and he was one of them they shot, and they killed at least seven medics in the bunch. When they got through shooting these people, they walked around and kicked them, and if they made any sound, they shot him in the head. So he saw him coming while he was lying there, and he gritted himself as hard as he could, and the guy saw all the blood on his shoulder and just stepped over. He didn't want to get it on his shoe, I guess. He said, he's dead. So they went to the next guy and shot him. So after the Germans took off, he crawled out of that pasture, went up the side of the hill, took leaves and limbs off of trees, put them on top of him, so he lived through the night, and he saw us captured. Saw the whole thing go on, but he was afraid to holler to us because they'd get him again.
Wow. And if people have never heard of the Malmedy massacre before, they are just getting a picture that you stumbled upon the aftermath of it. And that leg that, as you drove off, you saw under the snow was one of the victims of that horrible German atrocity there, where Americans were just mowed down after they had surrendered. And so now, when you hear this and you find out that just the day before you were there, all these Americans were killed in cold blood by German forces, probably the same Germans who had you captured. When you realized that, what did that do to you?
Well, it was a very scary moment because they undoubtedly would have shot us. But the fact was, when I got out of my half track, I left my door open, thinking that it might impress them that maybe we had some wounded soldiers in our ambulance. When you're wounded, you still keep your arms. So they didn't know but what we have somebody in there with arms that would be able to shoot them. So they were in a position where they had to get away as well as we had to get away. And the fact that this kid, they told us later on, it was 100. They boiled it down to 80. I think the last time I heard it was 87 was the true count of those that was killed, but there was seven or eight who did like the other guy that came there and or happened to see us captured. Seven or eight other people did the same thing in the other hills. A few people lived, but most of them were slaughtered out there in that pasture, and it was very scary to me to think that these are the guys that captured us. Why didn't they shoot us? Well, they didn't shoot us because they were sitting ducks for anybody in my half track that had an M1 rifle, could have shot him. So that's why I left the door open to start with. And it worked out real well for us.
But it might not have worked out if you would have followed their orders and stayed for 15 minutes. And I want to read something here and then come back with a few follow-up questions for you. This was from the British government. It says, on 18th December 1944, Corporal Leatherman, operating a medical half track near Stavelot, Belgium, got behind the German lines and was stopped, searched, and made to leave his vehicle. He deceived the German officer as to our strength, went back to his vehicle, and drove it off under close scrutiny from the Germans and other personnel. His courage and resourcefulness not only saved his vehicle and possibly the lives of his fellow soldiers, but kept the ambulance to evacuate wounded men badly in need of attention. So this is an addition to your Bronze Star from the U.S. military, to the Croix de Guerre from the French. The British government gave you this medal, and it was actually presented to you not long after that by a name that I think people would recognize. Who was it that pinned that medal on you?
That was a general of the British Army, Montgomery. He came through Wiesbaden, Germany. After the war was over, he came through and decorated me and Major Solis with the medal from the British government, which was a very big honor for me. And then the French Army gave me the French Croix de Guerre with the Ecole de Bronze. That means with the Bronze Star. That means you have two medals of that. And then the Bronze Stars, I had one for that occasion of the capture, and I had another one for another episode, and then I was given another Bronze Star for the fact that when the war was over, they gave all the riflemen in the American Army who fought in the war, they gave them Bronze Stars. So the military soldiers said, what about the medics? And they said, well, if we deserve them, the medics deserve the Bronze Stars also. So they did give all the medics who were in combat the Bronze Star. So that's why I have three Bronze Stars.
In this occasion in particular, 18th of December of 44, to have the armies of three different countries recognize that what you did was significant and worth noting, that's pretty special. But I'm curious how much you've thought about it since then. And if I say, well, if you had agreed to stay for 15 minutes, like the Germans asked you to do, do you think you would be here talking to me today?
No, there's no doubt about it that they had their artillery set up for that. It's called Cross Points, is the actual place of the slaughter of Malmedy. They had to zero it in. That's how they came so close, because they couldn't see us. It was too much fog, but they came very close to us. So they would have got us for sure if circumstances weren't what they were under that occasion. We were very fortunate. We knew it as soon as we brought in that prisoner from off that hill. We knew that we were just very fortunate. And I thank my Heavenly Father for saving my life. I've been saved at least 12 times in my lifetime. And so there has to be somebody else that's helping you on these occasions. And for me to speak the German that I spoke that day was a revelation to me. It's a good thing to learn another language, but I never thought that the German language would ever benefit me to that degree.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're saying that in the heat of the moment, you were able to communicate in a way that you probably didn't think you could. You didn't think you knew German that well to be able to do that. But in that moment, as the adrenaline's pumping, as everything's going on, it sounds like the words just came to you.
That's true. That's a remarkable part about a brain. It can retain things that you don't even know you have. You asked me if I ever think about this, and that's the one occasion that capture is the one thing that comes to light very often in the middle of the night, and I think, well, what should I have done? What could I have done? How come I did it that way? And the one thing I thought of, I think of more often than anything, is if they would have shot Walters, I would have fired up my half track, and I'd charge straight across the road, because they could not turn around, and I'd have crashed into that command car. I could have crushed them back into that snowbank, and maybe we could have come out without losing anybody either. It's just things like that, but I get upset because I can't sleep. What good does it do to worry about these things now? But that, I'm sure all the other people in combat have the same experiences. It bugs you that you can't get it out of your head sometimes. But all in all, I'm thankful for all the things that I've done and been a part of, and especially with personnel I was around. We had a great bunch of military people and officers, and so that's why we came out of this thing as well as we did.
That was the late E.J. Leatherman, a baseball star before the war, a chiropractor later, and another Battle of the Bulge survivor with a story to tell. When we come back, another resilient Purple Heart recipient whose life and face were never the same after the Bulge. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.